we're back. You're listening to Money Talks. I'm Matt Hames here with Troy Harmon, Jennifer Thomas, Casey Smith. And we are continuing to answer your question. Thomas B. had emailed us earlier this week, and I'm just going to read the question, and guys, just jump in. It says, I'm in my 70s and in poor health. My wife is in her 50s and in great health. She will be the sole beneficiary of my IRA, which is just over $1 million. She's a bank manager, so she's not afraid of handling money, but she doesn't want to be involved in actively managing the portfolio. So we're looking for a set-it-and-forget-it type investment. We're considering a target date fund for 2035 or 2045, or maybe put it all in an S&P 500 fund or ETF. We also considered a third in a bond fund, a third in a world market ETF, and a third in an S&P fund. We have no children as heirs. House and cars are paid off. We also want to keep as much out of the government's hands as possible. What advice can you give?
Well, I think one of the first things, and there are some unknowns, so the first questions that I would have for this person is, does the wife have a need for any money from the account? If something were to happen to him, would she need to withdraw some of the money now in order to, you know, support her lifestyle?
Yeah, support her. Yeah.
And if so, then, you know, one thing we would also talk about is the 10-year rule. We would want to make sure that whatever she was going to need to withdraw in the next 10 years would be set aside in fixed income investments. Mm-hmm. We're not particularly enamored with bond funds. Just because of the fact that interest rates are so low. And if you put that money in a bond fund and interest rates go up, then the price of that bond fund will drop.
Absolutely. That's much different than buying an individual bond.
Sure. So we would look at more structuring, either CDs or using some of the bullet shares that we've talked about, the ETFs that have a definite maturity for that fixed income portion. The other portion, if you know, I mean, we can talk about the investment side, but, you know, if you wanted to mirror the market, you could buy an S&P 500 fund.
Yeah.
I mean, there might be some better choices out there, but, I mean, if you're looking for something that's not going to change very much and that's going to just follow what the market does, that would be.
Absolutely. Well, here's the thing, and that, you know, she wants to set it and forget it. I think really the best way to set it and forget it is to have a professional help you.
Right.
If you have, you know, one of the things about the way that we manage money actually is we talk about the 10-year rule all the time. So what has to happen is you go through and you figure out your financial plan. You as Jennifer asked, you know, is she going to need the money? Well, how much money do you need and when are you going to need it? Once you answer that question, then you can have a plan put together.
Right.
It's what we call the 10-year rule. So anything that you don't need in the next 10 years, you could leave in an ETF, the S&P 500 ETF, that would be fine. But when you get within 10 years of that need, then instead of buying a bond fund that will fluctuate and you don't know what you're going to get when you're done, the better way to do it is to, I mean, if you have a planner, they can buy for you an individual bond. The better thing about the individual bond is it's a contract between you and whoever issued it, and you know that you're going to get specific cash flows at a specific time. When you know what your income is going to be, you can match that to the need that you have, and you wind up in a situation that, like you said, Jennifer, the market goes up and down. It does whatever it does. We know because we've done a lot of the research, and we know that on a 10-year rolling average, the average return on the S&P 500 has been 10.5%, and that goes back to 1925. So you wind up in a situation you don't have to sell when the market's down. You know, you don't have to do anything. You can really set it and forget it if you have that plan in place.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, Troy, but, I mean, and obviously the planning is a key component, but the fact that the wife is in the 50s, the husband is in his 70s and in poor health. If she's going to need any of that money in the relatively near future, if she's not going to be 59 and a half, then you need to talk about what type of inheritance situation are you looking at. Because if she leaves it and assumes it as her own, then she's going to have to pay a 10% penalty if she takes the money out before 59 and a half.
Right. Yep. And that's what you were talking about. They ask about tax, so maybe we can cover that in a bit.
You know, they were asking for some kind of set it and forget it type of an investment. And, you know, when we talked about, yes, the S&P is kind of, you know, an S&P fund is a set it and forget it type investment. But the problem is, even if you structure it right now with 10 years worth of fixed income set aside, that's changing every year.
Yep.
And so you're not going to be able to set the account and totally forget it if she's needing to pull money from the account within the next 10 years. Now, we don't know whether or not she will or she won't. And what we were talking about is she's in her 50s. If she's going to need to pull money from the account, she's not yet 59 and a half. She's going to get penalized an extra 10%. You know, when you pull money out of an IRA, you have to pay tax on it as ordinary income, but there's a 10% penalty if you pull it out before you're 59 and a half. Now, if she inherits it, she can put it into an inherited IRA where she has to begin making withdrawals, and it's based on her life expectancy at that point in time, and there is a minimum amount that she has to withdraw, but she can withdraw more than that and just pay the ordinary income tax and not have to pay the 10% penalty.
Yeah.
So I think there's some questions around, you know, and if Thomas wants to email us and give us more information, we're happy to kind of go into some
poor
of those
Thomas,
things.
We're sitting here killing him off. You know, he just says he's in poor health.
He may just have a cold.
He's going to rebound. he might rebound. And if, you know,
that's
if
our hope.
She gets over 59 and a half, then it would be beneficial for them to just for her to inherit that as her own IRA.
Yep. All right, well, let's take this question from Howard from Dunwoody. I've been watching interest rates along with every other investor. My question to you is, with a flat or inverted yield curve, what will be the effect on the banking sector? Do we have long-term repercussions we need to worry about?
Well, first of all, let me just make it clear. We do not have an inverted or a flat yield curve right now.
Right.
It's relatively steep. In fact, it's gotten steeper just in the last month or so.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when you do start thinking about an inverted yield curve, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Usually you see this right before you go into some sort of a recession.
Right.
So, again, you know, it's the reason that I don't worry that much about whether or not we're having a huge slowdown in the economy. But basically, it would be a huge negative for the banking industry, because what the banking industry does, they like to make those 30-year mortgages. They
That's
like
right.
to lend money at the 30-year, and the yield curve, I guess the best way to explain it is the shorter time that you borrow money, the less interest there is on it.
Mm-hmm.
So the yield curve goes from the, if you're looking at a chart, the bottom left to the upper right, you know, and it makes kind of a hump in the 1 to 7 year
period. As opposed to a slope, it's more of a
hump. Yeah, it's really steep on the short end. So what winds up happening is banks borrow short term, and they continually borrow multiple times to be able to loan to individuals on that longer end. It's what they call net interest margin, and it's basically the profit margin for banks.
That's
And all of them have more or less the same profit margin. They might have specialties where they borrow certain, where they loan certain types of loans. But in general, the yield curve matters a lot to banking. And yeah, it would hurt. Now, one thing that we have watched, and I know they tried to get rid of it after 2008 and 9 when we had such a downturn in banking, but there is still a lot of bank revenue that is generated from trading in the market.
Yeah.
And you see other specializations. We see maybe a BB&T who's gone toward
insurance
brokerage.
Well, yeah, and you've had so many of these banks. I mean, the reality is in the interest rate environment we've been in for the last, I don't know, Troy, what do you want to say, 5 years?
At least
or longer.
Yep.
Margins have been so compressed, the banks have needed to find other sources of revenue to diversify their income statement. So it's everything from trading revenue to fee income they're looking for as it relates to things like you mentioned with BB&T, one of the I think the largest insurance agency in the nation now.
They buy up brokerages. They've done a lot of that.
So, you know, whether it's insurance sales, asset management, wealth management business, things that generate recurring fee income to the balance sheet is getting more and more important to banks. Competitively, they're having to do that.
Right, yeah. And like I say, a lot of the regulators coming out of 2009, part of the too-big-to-fail thing was that banks had gotten so reliant on their activity in the financial markets where
they
traded a lot so that they could build revenue. But it hasn't gone away. We're right back at it. I mean, you know, so if they can make money in an up and a down market, you could argue that it actually makes them a little bit safer than just having to sit and rely on on loans to make a living. So,
sure.
You know, all things considered, I'm not so sure that it totally crushes them, but it would cramp their style without a doubt. Yeah, they would go down. So, you know, all things considered, it's not just them that actually suffer either. You know, fixed income investors, when you have a flat yield curve, when you're indifferent because you can get 5% in a 6-month CD or 5% in a three year, a 10 year.
Longer. There's no reason to go out longer.
Exactly.
Right. There's no incentive to be invested long term.
Exactly. Your time is valuable. So, you know, you try to keep it as short as possible. You make your 5% and you assume that you assume probably mistakenly that you can continue to reinvest that money at 5% on the shorter end. They generally go away. I mean, the yield curve doesn't stay inverted for long periods of time. And like I say, when you start seeing that, you do start battening down the hatches for a coming
recession,
some sort of a downturn in the market for sure.
Well, I am anxious to hear you speak to this one because it's just an intriguing subject. So we've got another question here from Bobby in Forest Park. I've been looking at both iRobot Corp and ReWalk Robotics.
Yep.
I'm mostly fascinated with the robotic industry and want to invest, but don't know which application may be more profitable.
Yeah. Well, just to flesh it out a little bit, iRobot Corporation is more about home
robots.
That's
a movie, right?
They probably have.
iRobot, wasn't that a movie?
Was that Will Smith?
Will Smith movie,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I'm not a big movie buff, so you've stumped me on that one. But I will tell you that iRobot Corporation makes the Roomba. They make these little home type robots. You can get your house vacuumed by the robot, and they even have a floor washing robot now. But the company is profitable. It's right now it's pretty expensive. The PEG, which is the PE divided by the growth, is 2.37. We like that number really closer to 1, you know, where the PE of the company is approximately equivalent to the expected growth. Long-term growth on iRobot is 15.15%, so that's what it's expected to do in the next 3 to 5 years. Moving on a little bit to ReWalk. ReWalk is it's a real interesting robotics company, really more in the healthcare business. They have robotic exoskeletons that actually allow people who've had some sort of a debilitating event to walk again. It's good work. It's, you know, they're doing something wonderful, but they don't have earnings. And it's really hard for me to say, go buy a company that has no earnings. So
no earnings.
If you're going to get in here, get iRobot.
iRobot between the two. Well, very good. Market's going up.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
No surprise.
Here's the thing.
There.
The market's up 2 out of 3 days every time you look at it. So it's easier for me to say the market's going up.
Jennifer, we got up or down?
Up.
Casey?
I guess I'll be the contrarian. I'll say down.
Down.
Wow.
I'm going to go up. Tune in next week. We'll talk to you. Same place, same time. Money Talks. Thanks for tuning in.
All material presented is compiled from sources believed to be reliable and current, but accuracy cannot be guaranteed. The contents are intended for general information purposes only. Information provided should not be the sole basis in making any decisions and is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified professional, such as a tax consultant, insurance advisor, or attorney. Although this material is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with respect to the subject matter, it may not apply in all situations. This is not to be construed as an offer to buy or sell any financial instruments. It is not our intention to state, indicate, or imply in any manner that current or past results are indicative of future profitability or expectations. Portfolio holdings discussed are subject to change. There is no guarantee that in the future these securities will be held in Hensler accounts. As with all investments, there are associated inherent risks. Please obtain and review all financial material carefully before investing. Hensler is not licensed to offer or sell insurance products. This overview is not to be construed as an offer to purchase any insurance products.